Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point from Philadelphia and the Democratic National Convention. In the hall last night, it was an all-out attack on Donald Trump. Takedown time filled with dire warnings about the character and competence, even the sanity, of the Republican nominee. Former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg called Trump a con. Vice President Joe Biden electrified the crowd when he called Trump's outreach to the middle class a bunch of malarkey. President Obama got in his own jabs, then told the nation to reject fear and elect Hillary. So, if she won, what might a Clinton presidency actually look like? We're asking this hour On Point, Hillary Clinton in the White House, then what? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did the Democrats make a takedown case for against Trump for you? Are they effectively making the case for her, for Hillary? And what about where she stands on the issues important to you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With us now from Philadelphia, Annie Carney, covering the Hillary Clinton campaign for Politico. Annie, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Also from Philly, Sahil Kapoor is with us, national political correspondent for Bloomberg News. Sahil, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
And with me right here on the rim of the convention arena, you can hear the house band warming up in the background for tonight. Ian Bremmer, big thinker on U.S. foreign policy, president of the Eurasia Group, author of Superpower, Three Choices for America's Role in the World, to help us look at the foreign side. Ian Bremmer, terrific to have you with us right here today.
Tom, delighted to be back with you.
Let's just throw our ears back just a little bit to last night. It was incredible. I mean, they really went at Donald Trump. I don't remember anything quite like it. It was Vice President Joe Biden going on the attack against Trump.
He's trying to tell us he cares about the middle class. Give me a break. That's a bunch of malarkey.
Does Trump have a clue? No, said the Vice President. He does not have a clue about what makes the country great.
He has no clue about what makes America great. Actually, he has no clue, period. But folks,
punching hard there last night, and it just kept going. Former mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, himself a billionaire, much bigger billionaire than Donald Trump, talked about Donald Trump's record as a businessman, said, this guy is a con.
Trump says he wants to run the nation like he's running his business? God help us. I'm a New Yorker, and I know a con when I see one.
And what about competence and sanity? Bloomberg brought both into question.
Let's elect a sane, competent person with international experience, a unifier who is mature enough to reach out for advice.
All that and more before, way before, the President of the United States got up and delivered his own punches last night. Annie Carney, what did you think about the onslaught from the Democrats last night? The crowd in the hall absolutely loved it. What about the bigger audience across the country, Annie? How do you think that was heard?
I think that everyone did their piece of it. I think Mike Bloomberg was a really interesting addition to primetime coverage to have, I think, his role there.
Not a Democrat. Was a Republican, now an independent.
Was a Republican, but was an independent. Kind of the message was, I vote my conscience, kind of an echo of Ted Cruz. But also he's there to be, say, like, I'm a real businessman, to show you what that that's a fake businessman. So I thought that was effective. Joe Biden and malarkey is just so Joe, and everyone loved it, and not a clue became a cheer. It's kind of a weird cheer, but the audience ate it up. And then Obama's line about we don't want to be ruled was like an cutting down the idea that Donald Trump is a strongman or a dictator of some sort. So I thought that it was a very effective. And then we had Tim Kaine doing his Trump impression, which some people thought was silly and some people thought was sort of charming because it was terrible. But overall, I think it was a very strong set of speeches making the case for Clinton and making the case against Trump.
Strong against Trump, certainly. Let's hear a little bit of the president on that front, saying Democrats and Republicans have always had differences, but the clash of ideas pushes the country forward.
But what we heard in Cleveland last week wasn't particularly Republican, and it sure wasn't conservative. What we heard was a deeply pessimistic vision of a country where we turn against each other and turn away from the rest of the world. There were no serious solutions to pressing problems, just the fanning of resentment and blame and anger and hate.
And the president saying this country does not look to be ruled.
Our power doesn't come from some self-declared savior promising that he alone can restore order as long as we do things his way. We don't look to be ruled.
The word demagogue there last night, and the implication there of some kind of a dictator in waiting. Sahil Kapoor, again to you, crowd in the hall loved it, but for the nation at large, is this Trump in tatters or just the Democrats having a festival?
You know, we'll see how this plays, Tom. I think the really interesting thing here about the president's speech last night and about a major theme of the convention last night was that this convention did not pose, the Democrats there did not pose a classic ideological contrast that we usually see between liberalism and conservatism. They framed it as a choice, and you saw that perfectly with the president's line that you just played there. They posed it as a contrast between American democracy and pluralism versus what they described as an authoritarian demagogue. And, you know, they're not, and I think the strategy here is, as you pointed out at the beginning, to attack Trump on his character, on his trustworthiness, on his qualifications, on his temperament, and try to siphon off as many Republicans as they can. I think this is part of the reason Hillary Clinton picked Tim Kaine. She didn't want an ideological warrior because that is not the case she's prosecuting against Trump.
A pessimistic vision, Ian Bremmer, the president was saying last night, Donald Trump promoting, where we turn against each other and turn away from the rest of the world. The rest of the world is your bailiwick. When you hear Donald Trump, do you hear turn away from the rest of the world, or go and, I don't know, bomb, engage, make friends with Putin?
Well, I certainly hear that the United States is meant to become much more unilateral, not isolationist, but unilateral. In fact, Trump's foreign policy is very Chinese. It's very much focused on, getting the most you can in a transactional way from other countries around the world. It doesn't matter what the values of those countries happen to be. It is, you know, saying, what does America need, particularly tactically? Can we get it? And that's true whether you're talking about Putin's Russia, whether you're talking about Turkey, American NATO allies in Europe, whether you're talking about the Mexicans. He's going to get a better deal for us. But let's be clear. These two conventions were completely different. It's as if they were talking about different countries. Obama talking about how united the country is, Trump talking about how divided it is. And while there are people that are optimistic about the United States, we shouldn't pretend that, you know, Trump didn't get the equal amount of enthusiasm from his supporters last week. He got a huge bounce in the polls. What concerns me, and we're going to see this the next few days, Hillary better get the kind of bounce from this extraordinary Democratic, you know, sort of love fest around her.
If this is going to be a real contest and leave her in a position perhaps to take it.
I mean, if she doesn't get the kind of bounce in the next week that Trump did, it's showing you that the mainstream media and the pundits are missing something very significant about what's happening with Trumpism in this country.
Annie Carney, what about that? Let's listen to a little more of the president, and I want to come back to this issue of whether fear or hope is the more potent element out there right now. This is the president saying that, you know, the country would never elect a candidate like Trump, expressing confidence that it never would.
That's why anyone who threatens our values, whether fascists or communists or jihadists or homegrown demagogues, will always fail in the end.
They will always fail, and this country does not depend on the one strong man, on Donald Trump, said the president.
America is already great. America is already strong. And I promise you, our strength, our greatness, does not depend on Donald Trump.
Fear versus hope. The Democrats betting big on hope, though they put out a lot of fear of Donald Trump last night, Annie. But fear, hope, that spectrum in the American population right now as we head into the general election season, what's feeling more potent to you?
Well, this is the thing. Democrats I've talked to here see it's like a contrast between light and dark. They see that it was doom and gloom in Cleveland, and this is light and optimism here. And when you ask them, what are they doing to address the fear that the Republicans are responding to and that Trump is popular because of, they don't even really entertain the question. They say she has an optimistic view of the future and he doesn't. So that is an interesting point, that are they able to address the issues that have made Donald Trump rise in the first place? Are they missing something by just presenting this positive, optimistic view that they think is a Reagan-esque view of light compared to the dark? Another thing that I think was very significantly different about this convention than the Republican convention is this idea of bearing witness. They had, aside from the headliners we've talked about, throughout the week they had regular people on that stage, a lot more than usual. They had 9/11 survivors that knew Hillary Clinton when she was senator. They had a disabled woman Hillary Clinton when she was a kid. The idea that these people know Hillary and she has bared witness to their lives, there was no one but Trump's kids doing that for him. So that was a contrast they wanted to make as well.
Sahil, is bearing witness and talking light and hope enough right now? Or do you think the country has been convinced by Donald Trump that everything is in such a crisis that that won't do? That's not enough.
I don't think that's enough, because I think it's natural for people watching at home to apply, you know, a pretty significant discount to anybody that the Democrats handpick to, you know, give a character witness for Hillary Clinton for their nominee. I think it's important, though. I think she needs this because her biggest vulnerability, I believe, is the issue of trust. As you know, her numbers have gotten worse in the last few weeks, especially since James Comey announced that there won't be charges, but gave her a bit of a tongue lashing for being careless with classified information. Her untrustworthy numbers have gone up to as much as 2/3, and she needs people to point out that she's not, you know, the caricature that's being drawn of her, that she is maybe a very private and a very secretive person, but that deep down she's a decent person, and, you know, she doesn't care.
Hold the thought. We've got to take a short break right there. The lashing last night, definitely given to Donald Trump, how that plays across the country we're looking at, and what would a Hillary Clinton presidency look like? This is On Point in Philadelphia. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point in Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention. Last day of this convention. Hillary Clinton speaks tonight. Last night it was all punching Donald Trump. We're looking at the Democrats' big night of attacking Trump and what a Clinton presidency might actually look like. Ian Bremmer is with us. He's president of the Eurasia Group, global risk consulting firm, author of Superpower. Sahil Kapoor is with us, national political reporter for Bloomberg News in Philadelphia. Annie Carney here for Politico has covered Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. You can join us as well. Do you see Donald Trump as the dangerous, demagogue, clueless con man that the Democrats painted last night? Does the case against Donald Trump make the case for Hillary? Because, as Michael Bloomberg suggested, she's sane. And how do you envision a Hillary Clinton presidency? President Obama last night saying with confidence she is super qualified.
I can say with confidence there has never been a man or a woman, not me, not Bill, nobody, more qualified than Hillary Clinton to serve as president of the United States of America.
We will soon enough see what the country thinks about that. Let's get a couple of calls here, if I may. Austin, Texas, Nathan is calling. Hi, Nathan, you're on the air.
Yeah, you guys keep asking about, are they making the case? The person who's making the case for Hillary's election is Donald Trump. Everything the man says and does is against everything that we need in the White House and for the future. I mean, the guy is encouraging foreign governments to hack political officials. And that's just the most recent thing. What else do people need to be told by him himself? If it were anybody else, the guy would be on the side of the road somewhere. I can't fathom how it has gotten this far, and it's absolutely terrifying for the future.
So when you feel the fear, you're fearing Trump, and what? Like what? We're trying to look forward. What do you fear?
I fear waking up one morning to a headline that he has nuked Damascus because it's the easiest way out. I told you I was going to take care of the problem. I mean, and it sounds like a joke, but I think it's 100% plausible. The guy, I don't want to say he's unstable. I think he just doesn't really care. I can do whatever I want. Look at how far I've gotten by doing and saying whatever it is that I want to say. And
Nathan in Austin.
Eat it up.
Yeah, Nathan, I appreciate your call from Austin. I mean, I want to turn and look at Hillary Clinton and what her presidency might look like. But Ian Bremmer, just pick this up for a moment. You're in risk analysis. When you look at Donald Trump, do you see a game changer who, I mean, you say he's got a foreign policy kind of like the Chinese. They're not doing so badly. Does that just, I mean, it would be different. It would be very different, a different mindset, different relationship with the world. Last night that was presented as disastrous for this country. Donald Trump says, well, let's do it a different way. Or as a risk analyst, do you see, like our caller from Texas, you know, would you wake up wondering, oh, my God, what has happened, what might happen today?
Well, I think two things would happen. The first is that American allies who over the last 7 years have been asking themselves, is America as committed to us as we thought they were?
Yeah.
And they're worried about that, would actually think, no, they're not. And so as a consequence, they would hedge very significantly with a narrower set of self-interest over time that would undermine American influence globally, which would include things like the dollar. So I do think that Trump would have a negative structural impact there. But the bigger issue that I think is raised by your caller is how might Trump react to a big crisis? Like over 4 years of a Trump presidency or even eight, the likelihood that there'll be a massive terrorist attack, a big cyber attack, something that just he suddenly has to deal with, his 3 a.m. call.
Lap, yep.
Does anyone believe that he would act in a temperate way as a statesman, or would he potentially do serious damage? I do think that, you know, in a world that's becoming much more unstable, the potential that Trump, in reaction to a crisis, could actually undo some of America's truly consolidated political institutions in a way that could not be brought back.
Domestically or abroad?
Both, in reaction to a crisis. I mean, clearly the foreign policy is the biggest issue. And in a steady state policy environment, if there isn't a crisis, there's no American CEO I know that would say, oh, I'm going to suddenly invest less in America if Trump is elected as opposed to Hillary. But in reaction to a crisis, it wouldn't just be the foreign policy environment. I do think that some of what we think of as incredibly stable ways of doing business in the American government would be at risk.
Let's just stick with this for a minute. I want to bring it home to Hillary Clinton and her policy here. But what about Hillary Clinton abroad? Steady state, Trump says the world is in crisis right now. He says steady state overall means we continue in a bad direction. And Hillary Clinton, by Trump's account, would be more of an Obama handling of the world, which he sees as not sufficient and not putting America in an advantageous position. What about it?
There is no question that America's role in the world has diminished over the course of 7 years of the Obama presidency. The question is, how much of that is Obama and Hillary? How much of it is structural factors, the weakness of the Europeans, the rise of populism, the implosion of the Middle East, which is not just about terrorism. It's also because, you know, we have an energy revolution. And so the thing that used to make them legitimate, suddenly they can't sell for very much
anymore. So does Hillary mean more of that?
Hillary certainly means more of that. But
wait a minute. She does? More of this implosion? More of this problem?
Yes.
Okay.
I think the idea that an American president is going to fix a Middle East, which is reverting to a pre-Westphalian state.
Yeah.
It's falling apart because the Americans, no one is prepared to be the global policeman in the Middle East.
Yeah.
No one's going to bring oil prices back to 100, and no one is going to make badly governed Middle Eastern populations suddenly get back in the box and be quiescent.
Does Trump make it better or worse?
Trump makes it worse, but but the point is, Trump pointing to the fact that America's role in the world is deteriorating and the geopolitics have gotten worse under Obama, that's absolutely plausible. And the Russia issue is important, too, because, I mean, frankly, that's one issue that Hillary and Obama have gotten wrong. And he did say in the same speech that he said, you know, I'd love the Russians to hack us, which is a ludicrous thing to say. He also said the primary beneficiary of U.S. policy to Russia in the last 7 years has been China. That's true.
What's he mean by that?
He means that we've been saying we're going to punish the Russians for what they've done in Ukraine. We're going to isolate them. The Chinese have done vastly more business with Russia. We haven't punished the Chinese one bit. That's been a failed policy. And Trump, who is by no means strategically capable on foreign policy, is pointing out a fundamental truth that a lot of people around the world recognize.
Annie and Sahil, I want to bring it to you. I want to bring it home. First, Hussein in Columbia, Missouri. Hussein, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to point out if we assume that both candidates want to see the country move forward, which, you know, some people, I think that's where a lot of people get off. They argue that, Hillary doesn't want the country to move forward, or Trump doesn't want the country to move forward. But
I'm not sure what you mean by that, Hussein, but okay.
Well, you know, they argue that, they're just doing it for their own self-interest.
Oh, well, okay.
So, but if we assume that they are doing it for the good of the country, then we just have to, look at their vision. Do we want someone who wants to pull back from the globalization that the United States has been striving for the last, you know, for the last decade or two decades or five decades or,
yes,
you know,
many decades,
or
yeah.
Do we want someone who wants to move us forward and has, you know, high approval ratings around the world from different countries? And, you know, I see Trump's vision as, it's the same thing as with the Brexit. They're pulling back from globalization in a time where there's no way to do that anymore. You can't have an isolationist country these days.
Donald Trump may say, who cares about global approval ratings? He wants global respect ratings or something like that, and maybe that's different. Let's wind it back to Hillary Clinton. Let's say that it's now January, and we've had Inauguration Day, and it's President Clinton. We don't know. I mean, right now, we had Nate Silver, 538, sitting where you are the other night, Ian, and he said, toss-up, if it were today. But let's say it's President Clinton. What would she do at a Democratic debate in January, hosted by NBC? She was asked about her top priorities in her first 100 days in office. Hillary Clinton in January.
I would work quickly to present to the Congress my plans for creating more good jobs in manufacturing, infrastructure, clean and renewable energy, raising the minimum wage, and guaranteeing, finally, equal pay for women's work. I would also be presenting my plans to build on the Affordable Care Act and to improve it.
And what would she do on immigration? Well, here you go.
In my first 100 days, I will introduce legislation for comprehensive immigration reform.
And right on down the list, Sal Kapoor, what about it? Okay, now it's a Clinton administration. President Obama has bowed out. He's gone on a long vacation with his family. She's in there. When he came in, he spent his first weeks and weeks overturning executive orders of George W. Bush. How would you see Hillary Clinton coming in? Is it just steady as she goes? You don't see any big thing happen? Is the ship of state keeps on the same course? Or would we feel a change, and what might it look like, Sile?
I think the ship mostly stays on the same course. She's been very emphatic about wanting to protect President Obama's achievements and expand on them in ways that she can. I think the bigger answer here, Tom, is that so much of it depends on what Congress looks like, right? If Democrats take back the Senate, there are certain things they can do. They take back the House as well, there's a lot they can do, but taking back the House is very unlikely. I think it's notable that Hillary Clinton has moved considerably to the left of President Obama in a country that's becoming younger, more ethnically diverse, it's becoming less religious. It's becoming more culturally liberal. And I think where Hillary Clinton is going to focus the most in her, you know, in her first year, I suspect, is on pocketbook issues. She's talked about raising the minimum wage to as high as 15. She's not going to get that, but she can get, you know, she might get some sort of increase. She's talked about guaranteeing workers as much as 12 weeks of paid family and medical leave, limiting child care costs to 10% of family income, making in-state tuition at public colleges free for families making $125,000 or less. The last one was a major olive branch to the Bernie Sanders supporters. That's going to be her priority because she knows ultimately she's going to be judged by whether ordinary people see an improvement in their lives. It's going to be a very, very drastic and sharp shift in the opposite direction if it's Donald Trump, because there's much he can do just by executive action to unwind President Obama's achievements, whether it's gutting portions of the Affordable Care Act by giving states waivers, or on the international stage in particular, you know, with President Obama's initiatives with Cuba, opening relations there, with Iran, the Iran nuclear deal. There's a lot that Donald Trump can do to torpedo things on the international stage.
Annie Carney, if Sahil is right, if Hillary Clinton would bring a real move to the left of Obama, and I want to test with you whether you believe she'd actually do that. She's positioning for Sanders supporters. Is she really moving there? But if she were, what else do you see might come in that package? I mean, Sahil's talking about minimum wage and weeks of leave and tuition-free state college attendance for family, kids of families making under $125,000. Where else, what else might the rubber hit the road if it's a leftward motion?
Well, I think a big question mark is what she'll do on TPP. It's an issue that I think that a lot of Bernie Sanders don't really believe that she opposes TPP when she supported it as Secretary of State. and her longtime close friend, Terry McAuliffe, made some comments to me earlier this week that sort of implied that he thinks if she gets elected with a few tweaks, she will support it. So I think that's something to look at. How state was this a campaign promise in the midst of a tough fight against Bernie Sanders, or is she really going to be against it? And another thing,
What did the Clinton people say to that, Annie, when you reported that? And that was a good story. Terry McAuliffe saying a few tweaks and we're back in TPP business. What did the Clinton camp say themselves?
We pressed publish on that story and then just sat there and waited to see how long it would take them to.
5 seconds?
To throw Terry under the bus a little bit. Yeah. I mean, John Podesta tweeted and confirmed to me that no question she's for TPP before the election and after the election, and that they have never spoken.
Wait, for it or against it? For it or against it? You said
against.
For. You mean against. You mean against.
For and after the election, that they've never spoken to Terry McAuliffe about this. Terry McAuliffe's office tried to walk it back, saying he was trying to say that this is what he would like her to do, because he's a supporter of TPP. But it was so problematic because, A, it came at this moment right after Bernie Sanders had done the right thing and united the party. And it played right into what Bernie Sanders supporters think is the reality of her position.
That's a big deal. It plays out in so many ways in terms of jobs at home, in terms of the economy at home, but also in terms of the international order. Here was a moment of Hillary Clinton on Face the Nation in May, talking about NAFTA and the TPP, these big trade deals, and TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
I voted against the only multi-nation trade agreement when I was a senator, and I raised doubts about NAFTA. I said I would like to renegotiate it when I ran back in 2008, and I oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership in its current form.
In its current form. But also, in that same conversation, she talked about her bigger perspective on trade, saying, look, we can't back away from this. Look at our position in the world. Here was Clinton.
You know, I do want to set the record straight because I do believe in trade. We are 5% of the world's population. We have to trade with the other 95%. That has, on balance, been a net plus for our economy. And we have to be smart, however, about the deals we enter into.
Ian Bremmer, let's get real on a Clinton administration and trade deals. She has been kind of here and there and here and there. She came out very strong against TPP in its current form in order to get in the game with Bernie Sanders. It certainly appeared to me, maybe that's too cynical. Once she's sitting in the White House, if it's her, in the Oval Office, what does she do? Why?
Well, look, I think that the one thing they pushed back hard on that Bernie really wanted to see in the Democratic platform.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him a lot on education and on health and on labor. They did not on TPP. He wanted to say no way, no how the Democrats mm-hmm. vote. Clinton folks pushed back hard. She was the architect of this trade deal. She's the architect of the pivot to Asia.
At one time.
That's right. But of course, you know, the U.S. left the gold standard in 1933.
Yeah,
so at the end of the day,
okay.
You know, who knows? Look, she's clearly in favor of it, but she also understands that she's going to have to provide something linked to this.
Can they open it back up and change it?
No, they cannot.
So,
they can't.
What are her options?
They have to attach some sort of legislation in the United States along with TPP that would say, here's some stimulus that's going to go towards training, infrastructure, target key
stimulus,
sectors.
But the things of the agreement itself could not be changed. The fact that things can be litigated outside of American courts.
If you try to reopen this trade deal,
mm-hmm.
You will not get it passed with all of the Asian partners that have been negotiating. So when she says not in its present
mm-hmm.
form, and I've spoken with some of her advisors about this, what she really means is, and McAuliffe is very aware of this, irrespective of whether he's talked to Hillary directly or not, that they want to find ways that along with TPP passage, they will ensure that there's support for American working and middle class. That is, so TPP
so
is still happening.
Ameliorating legislation on the side, but TPP happening, you see in an Obama administration, Clinton administration.
It's going to be hard because Paul Ryan's already said the Democrats have screwed up, and so as a consequence, he doesn't see a vote coming through in the lame duck. There's a lot of anti-trade sentiment that a lot of Democratic congressmen and senators are going to have to react to. So what should have been a slam dunk for the Obama administration and would have been perhaps the most important foreign policy legacy on the positive side he would have had is now at best a coin flip.
Wow. This is going to be something to see, especially after all the back and forth with the Sanders people. Sahil Kapoor with Bloomberg Politics, national political reporter there. It's been great to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sahil.
Thank you, Tom.
Annie Carney, please stand by in Philadelphia. Ian Bremmer with us right here in the hall on the rim of the arena. When we come back, Jelani Cobb joins us. We're talking about the Democrats' big night of attacking Donald Trump and what a Clinton presidency might actually look like. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook at the Philadelphia Center for the Democrats' National Convention. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are broadcasting from Philadelphia and the site of the Democratic National Convention. Last week in Cleveland with the Republicans, this week in Philly with the Democrats. Talk about night and day. Very, very different tone in these convention halls. We're looking at the Democrats' big night last night of attacking Donald Trump, and we are looking at what a Clinton presidency, if that should come to pass, a Hillary Clinton presidency, might actually look like. You can join us. How do you see Hillary Clinton moving on the economy, social issues, ISIS, on guns, on immigration, on the minimum wage, on trade deals, the TPP? Can she take the country out of gridlock and move it? Move it where? She's talked about a lot of issues during the course of this campaign. Here she was in Columbus, Ohio in March, said she was going to put coal companies out of business.
Now we've got to move away from coal and all the other fossil fuels. But I don't want to move away from the people.
Don't move away from the people. Ameliorate. Do something for them as you move to a new energy base. Immigration. Here she was, primary debate in Miami in March. Outlined her plans on immigration policy, tilting in the favor of current undocumented immigrants.
I do not have the same policy as the current administration does. But I think it's important that we move toward comprehensive immigration reform, but at the same time, stop the raids, stop the roundups, stop the deporting of people who are living here, doing their lives, doing their jobs, and that's my priority.
There's a difference from the Obama administration, she says. Less deportation. Obama has done a lot. And let's get one more, and we'll turn to our panel. Let's think about ISIS. Big deal. Donald Trump has made a lot about it. In December, she gave an in-depth interview with Charlie Rose on CBS about her ISIS strategy. Like Obama, she said it does not include sending combat troops into Syria or Iraq.
We're not putting American combat troops back into Syria or Iraq. We are not going to do that.
Under no circumstances would you not do that?
Well, at this point, I cannot conceive of any circumstances where I would agree to do that. We don't know yet how many special forces might be needed, how many trainers surveillance and enablers might be needed. But in terms of thousands of combat troops, like some on the Republican side are recommending, I think that should be a non-starter.
A non-starter, boots on the ground. On the other hand, you hear her listing their special forces, trainers, surveillance, enablers. That can be a lot of boots right there. Annie Carney is with us, reporter for Politico, covering Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. Ian Bremmer is here, big foreign affairs eye on the world, president of the Eurasia Group, and with us as well right now here in Philadelphia, Jelani Cobb, staff writer for The New Yorker. Jelani Cobb, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Jelani, we've got people calling in. Let's just begin to get a couple, and I want to get your response. Lewis in Atlanta, Georgia. Lewis, you're on the air with Jelani Cobb, Ian Bremmer, and Carney.
Hi. Before we look at the Clinton presidency, what it's going to look like, you have to go and say, what did Obama inherit at the beginning of his eight years? And, it was a blown-up economy and a blown-up Middle East. And
we got that. Look ahead. We got that. Look ahead with us, Lewis. What do you expect now?
I'm just saying the problem was so bad that it continues to be so bad. Clinton has to stay the course. There cannot be any dramatic changes going on. He struggled so hard to get us to where we are, both with the economy and the Middle East. There cannot be any dramatic changes. She has to stay the course incrementally. However she's going to do it, it's got to not veer from what Obama's groundwork has laid.
Lewis, we've got it. We've got it. We've got it out of Atlanta. Jelani Cobb, I'm sure you heard the president speak last night. In a way, Lewis is channeling the president, saying, look, we came in, it was bad, we've worked steadily toward, we're not saying everything's perfect, but we've made a lot of progress, and if we stay on this course, He says he's very optimistic about the future of this country in this century. Joe Biden saying the same thing. If you step back so that we can maybe compare it to a Hillary Clinton course, what is this course we're on? Donald Trump says it's like a ship going over Niagara Falls.
Right. Well, what I think is interesting is the point that she just made in kind of establishing a difference between herself and Mr. Obama on the issue of immigration. And so, of course, this has been a kind of controversial issue, certainly among progressives during Obama's presidency. Early on,
that he's gone hard after undocumented workers in the country and shipped them out.
And
big numbers.
Deportations, right. And so I think that would probably be something that she would move in a different direction on, because it's been questionably profitable, at least politically, during the administration itself. Early on, people rationalized that or presumed that what the administration was trying to do was kind of come down hard in order to find a way to navigate to the middle and get some
protect
sort of reform.
Protect their flank there from Republican criticism.
Right, protect their flank. Mm-hmm. And that didn't really work. That didn't happen. And so they got nothing for it. But the policy persisted for reasons, I think, that are a little bit inscrutable right now. And so I wouldn't be surprised if I saw her move in a different direction on that. As it pertains to Syria, you know, you see she's making this really hard line. I think about not sending in troops. I think part of that is about the uneasiness that people in the Democratic Party have had with her as, you know, Hillary the hawk. The other part of it is, you know, not, you know, unsurprisingly, is that she was in favor of removing Gaddafi in Libya. Mm-hmm. And the biggest issue
and Trump did that as a great success for years afterward.
Right, but we also get Benghazi out of it. And so I think...
And a mess in Libya now.
And a mess in Libya now as well. And so, and quite honestly, from the beginning, I mean, Gaddafi was never a good guy. He was not a good actor. But for lots of reasons, he was not interested in antagonizing the West at just that point. So the decision to take Gaddafi out kind of remained kind of a head-scratcher in some circles.
But Jelani, you're a big thinker. Go take your shovel, go deeper, go broader with us. There is a big Trump critique now of the Obama administration, which he says would be the same critique of a Clinton administration. It's an extension, he says. And basically, as I read it, he said, you know, it's that the U.S. is in a muddle because we've got misguided apprehension of the world, that we're stalled out in some fundamental way, and we're going down. If that's the Trump view, how would you describe the Obama view or the Clinton view of what's going on here? Because the American people are kind of trying to figure out, what's the compass setting? What's the what's the big you know, train that we're riding here? What's the definition of it?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that you know, both of these things can be true. I mean, there can be...
We're doing great and we're going down?
Well, no, I'm saying that there can be things that are problematic and there are things that are actually, you know, going well at the same time. I think people are looking at these things and saying, well, you know, what part is the glass half full, glass half empty? Although I think at this point, I think Trump is probably saying the glass is entirely empty.
It's empty and it's poisoned and it's on fire and so blown up.
But I do think that there's this point of just kind of what you're presenting to the American public. If you remember that Barack Obama, as he pointed out explicitly last night, his political career was facilitated by his decision in 2004 to talk to the country in an optimistic way about the divisions and the fractures and so on. And if we looked at the convention speech that Obama gave in 2004 and then looked at the convention speech that Trump gave last week, these are almost kind of mirror images of each
diametrically
other.
Diametrically
talking about
views.
The divisions, talking about how they're intractable, and then possibly doing something which is kind of staggeringly novel or unprecedented in saying, I am the only person who can save you. Like, that was shocking to see in American politics because it harkens back to a kind of Mussolini figure or, you know, the great appeal of fascist strongmen.
But take on the Trump critique that Obama doesn't really see what's going on in the world, that while he messes around with the dials and talks about justice and hope, that the country's going down. And, you know, it takes a big step back, new whack at all this to make it work.
But it's interesting. I mean, Putin himself said a few weeks ago that the United States was the only superpower in the world.
Yeah.
Which for him would probably be about as easy to do as swallowing a mouthful of cotton. You know, it's not as if this is, you know, a question of the United States still being a world power or the United States still having the world's largest economy or any of these things.
No, it's all about direction and where it's going. Let's get Charles in Nashville, Tennessee. Charles, you're on the air. What do you see?
Thank you. Hi. Yeah, the question you were asking for was, did the Democratic speeches sway me? And I said, because there are messages of hope. And I said, what disturbed me was they seem to have hope, but blind hope. They are neglecting three things that I see right off the bat. One, they neglect the rise of ISIS and terrorism. They're not really addressing that very well. They're not addressing the millennial generation, which has come to the workforce and not seeing the promotions and raises that I saw coming up. And they're addressed, and no one's addressing the problem with the national debt. I have grandchildren, and I just fear that we're just throwing all our problems on them. Talk about taxation without representation. And none of that, and no way to address that. In fact, I think the latter is the last one on national debt is worse with what I heard, because they're willing to give away everything. The only way to give away everything is to borrow more money. And that's all I mean,
we're hearing Donald Trump would be a disaster on debt as well. So where do you finally come down, Charles?
Yeah, I recognize that as far as an issue. And I said, at least he has the view from a business side that if he can find ways to stimulate the economy, then through reducing taxes in the right place, then they'll generate more taxes in the end.
What about Michael Bloomberg's big attack on him last night, Charles? Michael Bloomberg's attack on him last night as a businessman, saying, come on, this guy's a con. This is not a great businessman. He's had suits up the yin-yang from everybody, and he hasn't really done it.
Well, Michael Bloomberg, he's had his opinion, and I think that what we've seen with Trump is someone who at least finds the right people to make himself successful. You can't say he isn't successful. I don't think you can say that.
Charles, we got it. Our time is short. Let us pick it up right there. You've given us a bunch to look at. Annie Carney, Donald Trump talks in these big sweeping statements. Hillary Clinton is more of a policy wonk. She wants to get in there sort of piece by piece, nut and bolt. If that's going to be the approach, and it's going to be generally the same gist as the Obama years, which is kind of what she's saying, if it's going to be incremental, can she pull that off? A lot of people look at Barack Obama and say, you know, an awful lot of what he maybe dreamed of doing went nowhere because Congress was opposed to him. Can Hillary Clinton pull it off, or do we have 4 more years or 8 more years of being kind of stalled in some way?
Well, I think, like Sahil said earlier, it really depends on how much she can get passed in the House and in the Senate.
But that's what I'm asking, of course. Can she do something because she's Hillary Clinton that Barack Obama could not?
Well, I think that she, one thing that she is good at is compromise and reaching across the aisle. This is the story that we've been told all week. You know, she worked with George Bush to get money for New York after 9/11. She worked with Tom DeLay when she was first lady. She knows how to work with Republicans, maybe in a better way than Obama did when he first came in and didn't know how blocked they were going to make him.
She was in January talking with the Des Moines Register about why she thinks she could be more successful with Congress than the president. She was asked about that. Here's her response.
Because I have much more experience doing it. I worked with Republicans in Congress in the 90s when they were going after us, hammer and tong.
Do you think, Jelani Kopp, she has some magic on dealing with Congress that President Obama has not had?
No, I think this is math. I think that what's happened is that we have such highly divided and gerrymandered congressional districts that people are not concerned about there being any kind of backlash. Even going back to kind of enabling Congressman Joe Wilson standing up and calling Barack Obama a liar, and then actually winning his reelection on the basis of that. And so I don't think that this is something particular. And if we all also think back to this, it's a plausible argument to say that the origins of this gridlock in the modern context began during the Clinton presidency, where you saw this kind of hyper-partisanship and division that culminated in his impeachment.
Even though then they were going centrist. Now she's talking more left.
Right. I also think that she's in a really kind of the Bernie Sanders complicates this equation tremendously, because she's in a position of having to hold together the Democratic coalition, including the Sanders people, while appealing to people who are in the middle, who are going to determine where this election goes.
In Bremer, step back then and look at this. If Americans feel like somehow the country is in a box and it's not moving enough, the very hopeful vision last night, many will respond to that. But if in some sense we can also relate to the economy doesn't seem to have that full steam that we'd like it to have, there's a lot of people still worried about jobs and debt. Is there a breakout that Hillary Clinton can make here that's something different from Barack Obama while still being in the Obama mold, the Obama theme?
Well, that's the big question, of course. I mean, the one thing that I disagreed with most strongly that Obama said last night, which was a very strong speech, is the notion that America is not particularly divided. I think America is much more divided today than it was when Obama became president. Now, I don't believe he's responsible for all of that, maybe not even most of it, mm-hmm. though I do think he's responsible for some.
Okay.
And then the question is, well, the bits that he's responsible for, because, I mean, he said, I've got a pen, I've got a phone, but I'm not, yep. you know, but he's not yep. necessarily the guy that knows how to work Congress.
Yep.
And that, you know, he's very sensitive to younger, socially liberal populations, but the Trump supporters who cling to their guns and their religion, as he said, mm-hmm. not something he necessarily engages with mm-hmm. very well.
Mm-hmm.
Does, you know, I think that when you mm-hmm. put all of that together, you wonder, well, is Hillary going to be better? The big difference between this convention and last week's is, of course, this convention, last night was the big night. Those were all the people support. Everyone's negative about Hillary. Where, I mean, frankly...
Well, not here.
We're talking nationally.
Yeah.
I mean, Hillary is the more problematic character, even in the Democratic Party, than Obama is.
Turn it for 1 minute, and that's about all we've got to ISIS and terrorism. Do you see a change in course under Hillary? She's got a more hawkish reputation than Barack Obama. What might, could she do differently in a Clinton administration on ISIS and terror?
Only slightly. I don't think there's anyone on either the left or the right of the spectrum in terms of the moderates that really have a very different idea. I mean, yeah, you could imagine that if Hillary hadn't been around, Obama might not have gone into Libya and taken out Gaddafi. He did say in that big Atlantic interview he thought it was the biggest mistake he had made mm-hmm. in the administration. That kind of throws Hillary under the bus a bit. It's not Benghazi, it's getting rid of the Gaddafi. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that Hillary is going to have a radically different perspective because, again, the Americans are largely on the sidelines for the reasons the Middle East is imploding.
Would she do something different than Trump on ISIS?
Well, there's no question about that, because she'd have a much easier time getting allies coordinated against ISIS, where Trump has the potential of actually wrecking NATO as an alliance. So it'd get worse under Trump, but no one thinks it's going to get better under Hillary.
Jelani Kopp, can you see some kind of new morning in America under Hillary Clinton? Do you feel the economy ready for that, or the people ready for that?
I don't rule that out. I think it's a possibility. And
because
to sidestep your question, I think there's probably night in America if the election goes the other way.
Mm.
Agree.
Mm. Okay, here we sit. Hillary Clinton takes the stage tonight for her own speech in Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention. Annie Carney with Politico in Philadelphia, covering Hillary Clinton's campaign. Thank you so much for being with us today, Annie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jelani Kopp, staff writer for The New Yorker. Terrific to have you with us this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Ian Bremmer, president of the Eurasia Group. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today, Ian.
My pleasure, Tom.
Listeners, we'll be, this is it for the convention day. Last day. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.